Kelly.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Paul Pericelli, and I represent the appellant Beverly Oswald in this appeal. We are asking that this court employ its de novo review of the judgment of the bankruptcy court as affirmed without opinion by the district court in the Southern District of Illinois. We would ask that the court reverse the judgment of the bankruptcy court and enter summary judgment for appellant on appellant's cross motion, or in the alternative, remand for further proceedings.
There's something, maybe I missed it, but you seem to completely ignore the fact that when it came time to redeem the shares, the corporation brought them back from Friedrich, not Oswald. I mean, wouldn't that be conclusive that the shares had never been transferred to Oswald?
Your Honor, point I'd like to make on that is there was an effort made, and like most of the efforts made in this case by by the debtor, unfortunately, they were ineffective, but there was an effort made by the debtor to have the transfer documents revised to reflect that it was, in fact, Beverly Oswald who would be redeeming the stock and not the debtor. But I would ask that the court, and I don't mean to ignore that transaction, but I think the better approach is a different approach than the bankruptcy court took, and that is not to start with that transaction. Because certainly, if you start with that transaction, it is a much more dangerous case from the appellant's perspective. But I don't think it's appropriate to start there. We ought to start from the initial transaction in January of 1998, and when that is done, the subsequent September transaction becomes, in essence, a non-event. Does it look bad? It certainly does. As Judge Herndon indicated in oral argument with him, and it's in the appendix, does it smell? Yes, it does. But if we hold our noses and look at the initial transaction and work forward instead of looking at the second transaction and working backward, I believe that the appropriate conclusion can be reached.
Can I ask you just a procedural question here? That you said that Judge Herndon's decision is in the appendix. I know it's now in the corrected brief, but why wasn't the bankruptcy judge opinion and the district judge's oral decision included in the original appendix?
Your Honor, it was just an oversight. No other reason.
See, that's tough for somebody from Wisconsin. When you file this thing on the 15th of May, we look at the briefs before, a week or so before we come up here, and scourge around trying to find them.
And
we
Your Honor,
had to be something, so takes a lot of time. That's the most important thing to put in on the appendix.
And I do apologize for that, Your Honor. And we were notified when we filed the brief initially of the some inadequacies. We refiled at that time and thought we had it right. All I can do is apologize to the court. When looking at the
usually, I believe it was Darth Vader who said something like, "Apology accepted, General Beers," who then keeled over on the spot.
Right.
Is an apology adequate? We've gone one of two ways in these kinds of cases. One way is to sanction the lawyer, fine him $1,000, do a few other things, and the other is simply to dismiss the appeal for failure to comply with the court's rules. Which do you think we should choose here?
I think I'm going to drop down.
You want to know if we're going to affirm, first of all, or reverse before you answer?
Excuse me?
Would you like to know if we're going to affirm or reverse before you answer?
It was an oversight, and I do apologize for that. I know it was late coming, but I don't think that the district court's analysis was added an awful lot to this case, as he did rely on the bankruptcy court's opinion.
You know, the briefs reveal that the company initially offered $250,000 for Friedrich shares, but eventually agreed to pay $400,000. Will the record tell us if the company negotiated with Oswald or with Friedrich over the price of the shares?
The negotiations, the record, I believe, shows were between Mr. Friedrich and Paul Friedrich of the company. And that was Ms. Oswald. In January of 1998, and I would say also the record indicates that Mr. Friedrich did control many of his wife's affairs from January of 1998 through September. He was the one who knew the company. He was the one who knew the value of the company, and I believe it was appropriate for him to negotiate that sale. In 1998, which is it's obvious where I would like to focus the court's attention, the debtor and Ms. Oswald entered into a prenuptial agreement, and I think it is important to note that it was after a exchange of information and a review of financial information. There was a decision made that a transfer of property ought to be made to Beverly from the debtor, and that was done. That was this stock back in 1998, and that transfer was, again, if we get past the September and the smell of the September transaction, that transfer was perfected under Illinois law. It was a transfer of the securities, and Beverly Oswald did become a protected purchaser of that stock. She gave value. No one had any notice of any adverse claims related to the stock.
What value did she give?
She gave her waiver of marital rights.
And how much are the marital rights in a person severely underwater worth exactly?
Well, Your Honor, at the time, there is no evidence.
If you were here for the first case, I think the answer is a negative $79,000 plus payment on the guarantees.
In this case, Your Honor, there is no evidence as to the debtor's net worth as of the time of the prenuptial transfer. There's none. There's evidence in September, but not as of January 1998.
One ordinarily would think the person's position in September was similar to his position in January, unless, of course, in the interim, he had made a lot of fraudulent conveyances.
Your Honor, you may have hit upon a reason, if anything, to remand, because the debtor's financial status, both in January and in September, was complicated, to say the least, and appraisals, although at the time of his interest in South of the Border, which is mentioned in the bankruptcy court's opinion, had a significant value upon his interest. It later turned out that wasn't true. In September, in fact, it turned out that was not true. But there is no evidence to his financial condition in January, and there is no evidence here of any fraudulent intent or inappropriate intent in January of 1998 when the initial transfer was made and perfected. The in terms of the exchange of value, the courts, and I have yet to find a case had directly on point dealing with a prenuptial waiver. It appears that the courts, the United States versus Davis, which is cited in the brief, would look to a prenuptial transfer similar to a postnuptial transfer, look to see whether there had been some negotiation between the parties, whether an informed decision had been made as to the relative values of the marital estates, and if so, in that instance, the value placed upon the transfer by the parties would be honored. Once that transaction is analyzed, and it's analyzed under Illinois law and found to be perfected, then the September transfer, which obviously I would like to have had been done some other way, but it wasn't, but the September transfer only completes what had been done back in January between these parties. The transfer obviously should have been made directly to Beverly, but Michael Friedrich had no right to those proceeds of the stock once he had transferred it back in January, and it was entirely appropriate for him to provide that money to Beverly Oswald, which is what he did under the doctrine of equitable conversion.
Thank you, Mr. Puricelli.
Thank you.
Mr. Motov.
May it please the Court. My name is Steve Motov. I'm the plaintiff trustee in this case. You have to start from the September transaction because you have to first examine when did the transfer occur. Transfer is a specific term defined under the Bankruptcy Act. It's that point in time when the transfer becomes so perfected that a bona fide purchaser can't acquire from the transferee a better right to the property. In this case, the defendant is claiming the transfer was done in January, which incidentally was before the prenuptial agreement. At the time the transfer or attempted transfer was made to her, it was a pure gift, and it was a gift to somebody who was not related because they had not yet been married.
Wait a minute. Do I understand you to concede the existence of and the terms of the prenup agreement?
No, it was not a term of the prenuptial agreement. There's nothing in the prenuptial agreement that refers to this transfer other than a clause which says that she is waiving any right to his estate or what property he has, except those which he specifically gives to her, and then makes reference to the attempted transfer of the stock. And both Illinois and Indiana, she was a resident of Indiana, he was a resident of Illinois, both require that a prenuptial agreement be in writing. Well, if this was a part of the prenuptial agreement, it certainly wasn't in writing. A transfer becomes effective. When it becomes effective, you have to look at the Uniform Commercial Code because that controls when the stock becomes transferred. And in order for there to be a gift, you have to have intent. I don't think there's any question of his intent here, but you also have to have delivery. The defendant did not receive the stock certificate from the debtor. There was no stock certificate issued by the corporation to the defendant. So there was no delivery of any stock certificate to the defendant in this case. And the transaction in September is consistent with what they did previously. Because in September, if you look at it in this light, they said, okay, in September, we're going to sell the stock. I'm going to sell the stock back to the company. Well, I think they recognized it hadn't been transferred to the wife. So all the documents were prepared in the debtor's name. He signed them. He warranted that he had title to the stock. His brother, who supposedly received the transfer stock power, signed off on the agreement. The check was issued to the debtor, and the check was deposited in the wife's account. That was clearly a fraudulent conveyance under the bankruptcy code, and it was also a fraudulent conveyance under the Illinois Uniform Fraudulent Conveyance Act. You look at what happened in January in order to determine when a transfer was made, and there was not a transfer at that point in time. You then have to shift into September, and that was clearly when the transfer was made by the deposit of the check in the wife's account. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. Our fifth case of the morning is United States.